young girl with her heart on fire. Born in the dust of the magic of history, it all goes on, yeah, the dream goes on.
And one of the great things about America is that we, unlike other countries, are an open society. Our government tells us the truth. Well, yeah, unfortunately, that's not always the case. And most of us, well, many of us, older folks anyway, remember November 22nd, 1963. And, you know, I'm not going to focus entirely on that, but it's about telling the truth. It's about keeping secrets. And what is this Obama government doing? This is not the Nixon administration. Well, I'm very pleased to have with us today on the Bert Cohen Show, Russ Baker. Russ, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Bert.
Russ Baker is an U.S. Investigative journalist and founder of the nonprofit website whowhatwhy.com. His focus is politics, secrecy, and abuses of power. Russ Baker has written for many American publications, including The New Yorker, Vanity Fair, The New York Times, The Nation, The L.A. Times, The Washington Post, The Village Voice, Esquire, Slate, and Salon, and has served as contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review. Internationally, his work, and it's a long list, it's real impressive. His work has appeared in dozens of top publications. In 1988, he was one of a handful of foreign correspondents to cover the Hutu Tutsi massacres in Burundi. He was in East Germany and Romania to cover the fall of the communist governments there. And in 2001, Baker, who was a Manhattan resident, rushed to the scene where two planes had just hit the World Trade Center and was nearby when the towers came crashing down. He was watching Building 7 as it pancaked and described it over the phone to an editor at the L.A. Times. Russ Baker is editor of whowhatwhy.com and author of Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years. Family of Secrets is based on more than 500 interviews and thousands of documents. It features more than 1,000 footnotes. It presents rather significant revelations about the Bushes and about the still unresolved national traumas from the assassination of John Kennedy to the removal of Richard Nixon over Watergate. Gore Vidal called it one of the most important books of the past 10 years. It was also endorsed by Dan Rather, historian and national security expert Roger Morris, and Bill Moyers. Well, again, thanks for being with us, Russ Baker. Your new article is entitled, Why is the Government Withholding Documents About JFK's Assassination? And of course, those of us, many of us, still feel the sadness of that day, and we have an abiding interest in learning the full truth of what happened. But before we get into the facts of this reversal on releasing the facts on or before the 50th anniversary of the assassination, why is this story significant? And in what ways should it concern citizens who expect openness in government? And how does this lack of revelation, a reversal of a promise, reveal a pattern of the way the Obama administration is handling information policy?
I think the expression, the past is prologue, is crucial. We can't really understand anything that is impacting us today unless we understand where the situation evolved from. And history, unfortunately, is sort of treated as an optional thing, kind of some sort of parochial interest. But in fact, it's not. It's no different than when you buy a house and you want to know what had gone on in the house before. You certainly ask somebody to come in maybe and check it to see if it's got termites.
Right.
We don't do that with American democracy. We look at the media itself tends to look at things in a vacuum. And so most of the reporting that we see doesn't contextualize what is going on. It doesn't explain where people or policies came from. And what came before that it caused what is happening now. And so that's the reason that I started whowhatwhy.com, which is a nonprofit supported only by the public, because I just became fed up in the decades that I spent in journalism, because we weren't doing this contextualization. So as far as the Kennedy records go, we don't know what there still is no agreed upon understanding of what happened in terms of the not just the death of a man, but the removal of a government. There was de facto, whether it was one man or more people involved, there was a coup in this country, and a government was removed. And we basically just went on with our business with a completely different person in the White House who unveiled a very different set of policies in many respects, and we just moved on. And so figuring out what the full story is behind that coup, I think, is essential. And it also, on a broader level, there is the concern that that if there is more to that story, that could explain the impediments to democracy that we are seeing and that we are discussing today, the frustrations we see with a very small number of people in this country having a disproportionate share of control over the levers of government and making the decisions that affect all of the rest of us. So getting to the bottom of the Kennedy thing, I think, is not just an exercise. It is something that's absolutely vital.
Wow, yes. And as I say, for those of us who remember it, you know, we'd like to know, too, because it was exceedingly painful. But you're right about the context. How rare is it for Americans to understand the context of what's happening now, what the policies are now? And we are fast approaching the 50th anniversary of that assassination. Tell us, Russ, what is the status of the government files on that event? Isn't there supposed to be some sort of release of information relative to the 50th anniversary? What's happening with the government files on it?
Right. So basically what has happened is the government has been generally reticent to release information on the Kennedy assassination, as it has been reticent to release information on many things. It's only sort of dragged kicking and screaming into the sunlight. And so we've had this constant process of trying to force disclosure. Now, opening came in the 1970s with the Church Committee hearings and then the House Select Committee on Assassinations. We got a little bit of a bump there in the 70s. And then in the early 90s, I think in large part thanks to Oliver Stone's movie JFK, Congress felt compelled to pass the John F. Kennedy Records Act, which then resulted in a commission that began declassifying more documents, and we've seen many more things come through. Unfortunately, there are at least, the estimate is 50,000 pages of Kennedy assassination relation documents that are being withheld in full, and we don't know how many of them. There are also many, many more that are declassified, but they block out or redact information, which actually is, in many cases, the most important information in those documents. And so they're not telling us the whole story. What I describe in an article you can read on our website, whowhatwhy.com, I think it's still on the front page, it explains in some detail how this process has been going down. And basically, Bert, what has been happening is that the National Archives, which are in charge of getting these things out to the public, have changed their tune as to when these documents will be released. One of the archivists there told some attorneys who have been involved for many years in pushing for release that these should all be cleared by next year, November 2013, in time for the 50th anniversary of Kennedy's assassination. That person has since retired, and now we are hearing that, no, those documents will not be released. So something is going on there, and it's very, very troubling. And then, of course, this then raises the bigger question of who's calling the shots, right, who runs the country, and who's making these decisions.
Amazing. As you were talking about they, you know, who is this nebulous they? I don't know who they are. There is this National Archives and Records Administration, but how it was supposed to be, as you said, the JFK Assassination Records Collection Act of 1992, and we should thank Oliver Stone for pushing that. they want to delay it, say, just another 4 years until 2017. Well, we've been waiting a long time. What's the big deal with waiting another 4 years instead of 2013, 2017?
Right. Well, first of all, now it's becoming clear that 2017 is not a final backstop, that this ball can keep rolling further. There are all kinds of loopholes built in allowing the president, whoever's in power at the time, to indefinitely keep pushing these things back. The whole process of records, I mean, another thing that's very interesting is that they've written something into the rules where former presidents can veto the release of papers from their own administrations, and current presidents can veto the release of those from former presidents. You've got this whole thing. Basically, we're kind of checkmated. And if you want to say who's the they is anybody whose interests are served by cloaking the truth in darkness.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of different people. It's not that we need to discuss who it is. It's anybody who has something to hide. And there's an awful lot of them. It's a shifting cast of thousands of characters. That's human nature.
We are talking on the Burt Cohen Show with Russ Baker, U.S. investigative journalist and founder of the nonprofit website whowhatwhy.com. We're talking about the significance of the delay in release, or maybe more than delay in release, of records of the JFK assassination. How does the National Archives and Records Administration operate? Who calls the shots in there? Are they just do they listen very closely to the top of the White House administration?
Well, it's very hard to know, and it's all pretty murky. As I point out in that article on our site, whowhatwhy.com, what you see is that the archives are subordinate to various individuals. There's a new position under Obama. He brought it, you know, the first day of his administration,
right.
He said that a new day has dawned in Washington. We are going to open this government up to the people. Everybody said hurrah, and
yes.
Not another look was taken at that statement by him or by the media or the public. But basically what happened was he brought in a friend of his, who was a Harvard professor by the name of Cass Sunstein, and he was placed in the position of administrator of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. And we could talk more about that, because that itself
yes.
turns out to be a fascinating thing. And Mr. Sunstein turns out to be a fascinating character, although if you look at him closely, a very odd person to be overseeing a place like the National Archives, which are supposed to be about providing the public with an orderly and convenient means of accessing our patrimony.
And I wonder about, and we all remember it, well, many of us remember the president on his first day of office making a commitment to more open government. What a relief that was after so many years of cover-up. You know, from Nixon, FDR covered things up too, for that matter. What happened to the president's commitment to open government? It seems that there's been a real change in his attitude. Has there been any kind of acknowledgement of a policy shift on this, or is it just swept under the rug?
Certainly no stated policy shift at all. They just really don't talk about this stuff anymore. I mean, this is the deficiency of the media, that they do not hold these people accountable. They're so busy chasing whatever is the story of the day.
Right.
And, of course, our media itself has been decimated
yeah.
By economic factors, largely, and technological factors. And, again, that's really why we got together and started this nonprofit, to try to do journalism the right way, because we think that somebody needs to stay after these crucial subjects. You have to remember, Bert, that in 1992, with the Oliver Stone movie, there was this tremendous public upswelling of interest and pushing. And then you don't get Congress. I mean, they voted something like, I think it was either unanimous or virtually unanimous to pass this bill. That almost never happens. And that was because there was so much public interest. Now the public is too distracted, isn't paying attention to these things.
Right.
And this is why we wrote this article on Who, What, Why. We want to draw people's attention and say, hey, you know, these things that may sound a little dry to you, like open records, you know, actually are very wet. They're very moist and
full of life. Yeah.
Full of life and incredibly important and relevant and interesting. And so they haven't had any pressure on them. And I think that, you know, when you talk about they and you talk about what happens to a president, well, presidents are under tremendous pressure. They're under some pressure from the public, but the public doesn't pay much attention, so it knows very, very little about what really goes on. Public pressure is channeled by those who want to achieve certain kind of results, and the public gets roused to a few select issues here and there. But basically, the president is under constant siege by the people who fund his campaign, which are basically economic interests. And, of course, then there's this entire giant shadowy apparatus loosely called the intelligence community, which is of 17, I believe it is, agencies, most of which we know little about, some of which we've never even heard of. It is vast apparatus with hundreds of thousands of people working at very classified levels. And this enterprise is in there constantly impacting and shaping what a mere mortal like an Obama does in the very brief time that they're in the White House.
Yeah, very, very interesting point. I know Gore Vidal has talked about a national security state. He's been 20, 30 years ahead of his time on that one. And the national security apparatus is, boy, you know, you think about national security apparatus, and East Germany comes to mind, the Stasi, you know, just watching out for everything. And, you know, I hate to get paranoid about this, and which brings up the subject of how often those of us who are interested in getting to the truth of John Kennedy's assassination and even September 11th are dismissed as, you know, conspiracy nuts. It's, you know, if anybody questions that, oh, you're just a conspiracy nut, and, you know, that's a way of absolutely dismissing that. I wonder if you might address that aspect of it at all. Has that been coordinated? Probably doesn't even need to be coordinated. It's just so easy to do.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because the man that Obama put in charge of opening up government, Mr. Sunstein, actually wrote an interesting paper when he was at Harvard where he referred to this issue. He said this was a problem, a so-called conspiracy theories, and he actually proposed, and if you go to our website, whowhatwhy.com, and you click, go down and find the article about the documents, go in there, you can actually click and read this amazing memo he wrote, where he basically said that what government needed to do was find a way to stop the distribution of these ideas, and that's quite amazing. And he at one point, he had various suggestions, and one of which was that the government covertly infiltrate networks of people talking about these things in order to distract them, put out false information, send them in another direction. Now, he, I suspect, did not mean that. I think he was being a little bit careless and foolish. I don't think he is so much part of anything himself as that he is part, what he is he's a member of this establishment that's very, very comfortable, and they are discomfited by talk about the system not working well. And so they feel that these kinds of theories and speculation are inherently dangerous and need to be discouraged. Now, it is true that wild rumors, wild unfounded rumors, can be destabilizing to any society.
True.
But at the same time, a lot of this is not wild unfounded rumors. It's people wanting to know why these things are hidden from us, why it seems like we're not getting the real story on so many of these things. And I can tell you from, I mean, my work on my book, Family of Secrets, it's 5 years spent looking at the Bush family. Now, a lot of people said, well, I don't want to read that. We already know everything about the Bush family. I'm sick of the Bush family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, many of the establishment people told me that. And yet, it turns out there's an entirely different story about who that family really was, how they came to power, who was behind them, why they did what they did when they were in power. And it is a stunning and deeply disturbing story of the violation of democracy on a whole different level. And it is the kind of thing that I think only people who are open to new ideas about how power works are willing to even entertain. If you're too comfortable, if you're too part of the establishment, even if you are a quote-unquote liberal or progressive, you don't want to hear these things because they are shattering to your own sense of yourself and your position in our society and the idea that basically the system works.
And we differentiate ourselves. Again, the United States, we are a free society, an open society. And this is, you're right, very discomforting, and it's disturbing. And of course, I remember when President Nixon was, you know, it was exceedingly controversial, his program of domestic spying on the anti-war movement. And yet you write that this Cass Sunstein advocated cognitive infiltration of these groups that are looking at things like September 11th. It sounds a lot like Nixon's then controversial domestic spying. And I'm just kind of surprised at that this administration, I wonder how it might compare. I mean, you obviously understand the contextual realities behind what is happening in the world today. How would you compare Obama and secrecy with George W. Bush, and particularly with that president most known for an obsession with secrecy, Nixon?
Right. So the Nixon thing, I'm glad you brought that up, because when you have a chance to read Family of Secrets, you'll see that as I went back through the Bush family and their doings over the years, I discovered some very surprising side paths. And those side paths took me into things that I had not intended to look at. You would say, why do you have four chapters in your book on the Bushes about the Kennedy assassination? Why do you have three chapters in your book about the removal of Richard Nixon from office? And the answer is that as I studied this intelligence community and covert operations and the rise of various politicians, what I discovered were certain continuities which are exactly the kind of things that the Cass Sunsteins want to poo-poo, but that are documented there with more than 1,000 footnotes and actual government paperwork. And that is that these presidents, and I include Nixon, were very constrained in their movements. In the case of Nixon, what's very, very interesting, we don't have time now to go into all that, but it was the role of the Bush family, actually, an earlier generation, of getting Nixon's career started back in the 1940s, The extent to which bankers who had created the intelligence apparatus of the United States actually essentially owned Nixon up until he became president and began sort of rebelling against them. This is a whole new history of Richard Nixon and Watergate.
Wow.
And what we see is that a lot of the things that you're referring to, like Watergate, like the bugging and so on, it's not that Nixon did or did not go along with that. It's that many of these were not his idea, that many of these were foisted upon him by these enterprises that are always foisting these things upon presidents who really don't have the background, the knowledge, or the skills to assess them and are essentially just signing off on other people's ideas. Now, when it comes to Watergate, what I discovered, which was really an eye-opener, was that Nixon had never authorized that, that Watergate was one of a series of covert operations authorized by underlings he didn't even know, in many cases, barely knew who they were, that were done in his name, that blew up in his face. And the more we look at those, the more we see the handiwork of elements in the national security apparatus that were actually battling with Richard Nixon, that were determined to wound him and eventually to remove him from office. And I know that's a mouthful.
Whoa.
To anybody who's not familiar with this. That's why I've got 600 pages and 1,000 footnotes.
My goodness. Well, that would be an interesting discussion, too. Fascinating stuff. Now, you know, to try to play the devil's advocate a bit here, look, we have a national security apparatus. We have an intelligence community whose role it is, allegedly, is to protect the national security. And might it not be the case that revealing more information about the JFK assassination, for example, and some of the interests that may have been involved there, Watergate, a bunch of other things, might it not truly endanger national security? I mean, there are covert operations and they're still being carried out. And might it not be the case that revealing this stuff might deter and affect negatively the ability to carry out these perhaps essential covert operations?
Well, I can speak specifically to my skepticism about that with regard to the Kennedy papers being half a century old. I think almost everything has changed since then. I can't imagine that I'd like to see somebody prove what it is, why something needs to be withheld. I think the broader point here is that any service that you provide people gives you power. And if you tell people, I am your airline, and I keep you safe, and I move you from one place to another. I am your bus company. I am your police department. Mm-hmm. I am your boss. I am your protector. You, of course, you provide a service to people. And, of course, you can ask them up to a point to trust them that they are looking out for you. The reality, however, is if you ask any of us to think about to what extent do you trust another person to just say, hey, I'm looking out for you. Do you, you know, you go to a restaurant and you assume that they are only using good ingredients, that their kitchen is clean, that they are everything is hunky dory there. Why? Because you assume they would fail as a business and that it's in their interest to do what they say they do. And yet we have a health department which goes in and routinely shuts down restaurants because they lie about their commitment to take care of us. And it's the same thing with every kind of law enforcement entity and military entity in the world. Human beings, by and large, tend to gravitate towards self-interest. And when you have entities like the national security state, on a day-to-day basis, the first thing that is not going through those people's minds when they get to work is, how can I serve the public interest? I mean, it's a job.
Yeah.
It's a job. It brings a lot of power with it, and there is zero accountability. And do you think that we ought to just assume that whoever happens to work at those, I mean, we treat those people from TSA abominably. There's all this stuff circulating on the internet about don't touch my body, and you disgusting people. The right wing constantly decries government bureaucrats as being horrible people. Now, why is it that the people who work at the post office are horrible people, and yet people in the military and the intelligence are going to be entirely trusted with anything?
And I must say, the people at the TSA, their job is to protect us, and we know it. I'm frankly thankful. I have an artificial hip, and I'm always glad that I set off the alarms. That shows it's working to protect us. But
ironically, Bert, those people, as you pointed out, I mean, more transparently do protect us because we could see exactly what they do. They search bodies and bags
absolutely,
for weapons.
As they should. So it seems like the CIA might be, I mean, they're made up of human beings who are interested in their job and their benefits. They might just be covering their butt, as it were, just to be able to keep up their clandestine actions and just say what they are. But we'd still like to know what the full story is with the JFK assassination, for example, as well as with other things like 9/11. And certainly, again, being of that generation, yes, I was in junior high school on November 22nd, 1963. And, you know, for most of the time since then, there's been widespread doubt about the rather obviously rushed Warren Commission report, the lone nut, the single bullet, the magic bullet. But in more recent times, there's been a spate of books, and it appears that perhaps it was, as the government said, that it was just a lone nut. So my question is, if that's the case, as you mentioned, you know, the kitchen preparing our food, what would be the government incentive to withhold information if it is, in fact, you know, just Lee Harvey Oswald?
Well, I'll tell you something. First of all, the natural instinct of almost all institutions is survival and self-preservation.
Of course.
And not rocking the boat. And wherever you work, whatever you're involved with, whether it's a media company or an academic institution, a corporation, the instinct is always self-preservation. You
CYA.
Point out to me a company that goes out of its way to reveal its defects to its customers
right.
or to its shareholders, and I'll show you a company that's not going to survive very long.
True.
And so when you work in the government, when you work in a place like the FBI, I mean, I've just spent the last week going through tons of FBI documents related to the Kennedy assassination, and you see nothing but inconsistencies and deceit in their own internal documents, leading you to say, well, who are these people and what are they doing? And, you know, you try to talk to these folks to understand what their value systems are, why they do what they do. I mean, it's very, very complicated, but the government is not made up of people who are fundamentally inclined to be whistleblowers. It's not made up of people who are looking for opportunities to lose their job and their livelihood. And if you want to ask anybody's spouse how they feel about their significant other taking some kind of risk which is going to threaten the family's livelihood and possibly even their safety, you're going to find that the answer is absolutely no. And so that's what you're looking at. You're looking at whatever the story is about the Kennedy assassination, and I have to say that as somebody who had no opinion on it at all, and as an investigative journalist who's in love with facts, I just had no take on that. And I came to that story by accident when researching George H.W. Bush, Bush 41, I discovered this, that he had been asked where he was when he heard that Kennedy was shot. He claimed not to remember where he was on November 22nd. I was intrigued by that. I thought, I'm writing a book about the Bush family. I'd like to figure out where he was. I knew he was a Texan. The killing was in Texas. I already knew that there were had been later on the CIA director, and that there were inklings of the fact that he'd actually had a past in intelligence activity prior to being CIA director. And so I want to know where he was. Now, we don't have time here, nor is this the appropriate forum for me to provide all of the many revelations from my book, Family of Secrets, but I will say that that's the reason I have four chapters in there, that there is, in fact, based on this particular reporter's analysis of something where he had no dog in that fight, that there is much, much more to the Kennedy assassination. It goes very deep into understanding the failures of democracy in this country back then and right through to the present moment. This country is a much more complex and, I'm afraid to say, much darker story than we like to admit to ourselves. This is such an uncomfortable story. You will not hear it in the corporate-owned media. You won't read about it very much, a little bit, but not very much in the big magazines. Most of the big book publishers will stay away from this because it's too upsetting. And the way that the economy functions, the way that we get through the day, is we shut out negative stimuli. You know the term, Bert, cognitive dissonance.
Indeed. We are talking with Russ Baker, investigative journalist. How rare these days, I must say, an investigative journalist actually looking at the facts, looking at the context, founder of the nonprofit website, whowhatwhy.com. And we're talking about his article, Why is the Government Withholding Documents About the JFK Assassination? Could you hazard a guess as to the number of documents that are still being withheld about that assassination?
Well, we don't know. I mean, somebody from the inside said that they had released 99% of the documents, which was something like 5 million. You see, there's a problem with all these numbers because you don't even know where they start from. I mean, why is the number 5 million and not 20 million? Because a lot of the most important documents that really connect to this would not even be labeled JFK documents. In other words, we want to know, as you'll see in Family of Secrets, I want to know more about various military intelligence units that were operating in Dallas on that day. Now, are those JFK records or are they not? Those may just be records about a military unit. We want to know lots of other things. So it might not be 5 million, it might be 20 million. But in any case, they used the figure 5 million. They said 99% have already been released. That leaves 1% or 50,000 documents. And so we'll work with that figure. We'll say, okay, we'd like to see those 50,000 documents. If you don't want to show us those 50,000 documents, please explain why 50 years later, how this is going to harm the security of the United States. And I think the answer is that the real truth will harm the security of the United States when the people of the United States realize that they've been sold a bill of goods and that the democracy in this country has never been functioning very, very well. It all makes perfect sense. Look at the Occupy movement. Look at the 1% of the 1%. Look at how the deck is stacked and how this, the same interest, no matter what happens, nobody goes to jail. They always end up on top. What do you call that? I mean, I don't call that a viable democracy.
And we're allegedly a republic, too, republic of the people. And, you know, the election, so to speak, of the year 2000, we had to go on. Somehow we had to go on, even though it was clearly an illegitimate election. George W. Bush, you cannot convince me he was a legitimately elected president of the United States. That there's history for that, although it was much more crude in 1876, as our friend Gore Vidal wrote about, when there was a switcheroo of who won the election of 1876. And, you know, we just go on with that. You talk a bit in your article about a woman named Cheryl Schenberger. What is her role in declassification decisions? More importantly, what is her background? When was she appointed and by whom?
Schenberger's name comes up because she has been appointed to be in charge of this declassification process. And what's very interesting about her is that she's the person who's really writing this whole thing on a daily basis. And so when they put somebody in there, you think, well, you know, who's in charge of records? Now, I would think you would get somebody and you would give them a high clearance because, they're, you know, obviously they're looking at and overseeing classified documents, but you would want somebody primarily with a balanced sense of what is of interest and of the let's say the scholarly and public interest involved. But what we find is that before she came to the National Declassification Center, she worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. And then you say, well, all right, but I mean, at least, you know, a lot of these documents are from the CIA and so on. That might make sense. But then you would at least hope that at the CIA that she had been an advocate of open records, that she had been involved with, you know, that they probably, you know, like they have inspector generals there, that she would have been somebody pushing for that. But when we actually look at her track record, not just a few years ago, what we find is that she was working in counterintelligence. That's she was actually an active operational person rather than a records person, and that she served as branch chief, and I kid you not, in the CIA Counterterrorism Center between 2001 and 2003. Now, that means that this is a person who was intimately involved with 9/11. You say that's the person that Obama and his people have put in charge of deciding what the public gets to see in the way of not just JFK records, but 9/11 records.
Mm. And certainly there are legitimate questions about 9/11, specifically that building that you saw, Pancake, that Building 7. And as you talk, Russ, I'm wondering about, you know, you talked about the powers that were perhaps more powerful than President Nixon when it came to a lot of different intelligent things. Obama has done a switcheroo on this. You know, I wonder what powers may be pushing him, and, you know, maybe, you know, giving him the benefit of the doubt. He went in there with the intention to actually have more transparency. I wonder about Eric Holder, the Attorney General, and all this, the Justice Department. I wonder what, you know, I hate to be paranoid about this, but again, the very fact that I'm thinking I might be paranoid sort of delegitimizes the thought that, yeah, maybe there really is something to this. Who do you think Obama really personally had been committed to open government and then he was pushed by significant powers?
Well, a couple of points here. First of all, one of the people I've been speaking to about this issue who's very involved with open records has a sense, and I'm not going to, I'm less expert on it than he is, but his sense is that maybe, you know, early on when Obama was creating transparency on some of the on the torture issue. You'll remember that quite a few things were released then, and that there was a huge outcry. Well, first of all, the public demanded Head's role. They wanted to see prosecution. Remember this: prosecute Bush, prosecute Cheney, prosecute all these people for war crimes. And Europe, I guess, in Vermont. I know there was even, I think, stuff on the ballot there about that. And so that certainly was an issue. Even Charlotte Dennett ran for Attorney General on that plank in Vermont. So there you go. But in any case, so the sense is that on the one hand there was a tremendous outcry for him to do something about that, and then he either wasn't inclined to or was unable to do anything, and this left a bad taste in his mouth about releasing records and the consequences. But on the other hand, there seems to have apparently been a tremendous backlash from the security establishment against Obama having done that, and he may have simply decided that he had to, at that point, pull back a little bit. That's one thing. Now, another thing is that he himself is a person we don't really know all that much about, yet another new book out about him, and they always emphasize about how secretive he's always been, how close he held his cards and so forth. We don't really know that much about how he thinks about any of these things. They all are, I think, to some extent, compromised. I mean, I don't want to make too much of this, but, you know, when he was in college, he worked for this company, Business International, which was a CIA contractor. So, I mean, you know, right, you know, the Clintons, a lot of our top people on TV, they all were, you know, interns at the CIA, or they were this or they were that. And not to say or make too much about that, because you don't know what to make about that, but that at some point in their early lives, their paths crossed with these enterprises and these kind of worldviews. And we don't really understand how those shape what they do down the road.
Wow, yeah, the power behind the throne. There was, of course, J. Edgar Hoover domestically, who had a heck of a lot of power over all the presidents, at least in theory, he worked under. Obama and WikiLeaks, I was fascinated by that. It's not like people's lives were in danger. Here was somebody, Julian Assange is, you know, enemy number one, it seems right now, for releasing the truth and the things that he showed. I would think a lot of Americans would want to know about. What do you make of Obama's reaction to the whole WikiLeaks thing? I was really surprised by his, the intensity of the Obama administration's reaction against WikiLeaks.
I think his reaction reflects pressures bubbling up from the national security state. Obviously, a lot of consternation, but also not just consternation. And this is where I think this WikiLeaks thing is going to turn out to be much more complicated than we realize. And speaking as a reporter who favors, who does not favor publishing documents without related research and vetting. And this is why I started Who, What, Why. Another reason is because I think that we're in danger in this world today I don't know if you heard the expression, a lie travels around the world before the truth can get its pants on. There is some correctness to that, that there's a real danger, information is power, and information causes reactions. And so I understand that people are worried when large amounts of raw material is put out without being analyzed. And I'm not going to take sides on this thing, but one of the things that the way it used to work was documents were obtained by journalists, and they would then try to figure out, A, were the documents real? B, mm-hmm. were the people who wrote them saying what they really thought? Because let's remember how many memos are CYA, you know, they're intended for purposes other than to just provide the truth. So that can create some false spin. What is the context in which the information in the document is nested? Mm-hmm. And so this is hard work. This is hard journalistic work. And so I think it's complicated. I also think that the The downside of these mass disclosures was that it allows those who are not for openness to use them to argue for more of a clampdown. And that is exactly what we're seeing. The net result of the WikiLeaks thing is not any kind of greater government disclosure, but quite the opposite.
Interesting. Very, very good point that, it could argue against more openness. We are talking with Russ Baker, investigative journalist, founder of the nonprofit website whowhatwhy.com, about starting with the question of why is the government withholding documents about JFK's assassination. We're going into secrets in general and where this administration is. And there's something called the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. And you wrote about the person at its head, Cass Sunstein. And you had a very interesting exchange with him. And I wonder if you could talk briefly about what that was.
Right. So I contacted his office wanting to interview him. Now, I didn't have a direct exchange with him. I was told that he was not available for interviews. And on our website, whowhatwhy.com, in that article is the government holding back crucial documents. You can see I actually reprint the email exchange with one of his staff people. And then she tries to refer me to the archivist at NARA, at the National Archives. And then I say, is this typical that the head of open government policy is unavailable for interviews? It seems that just seems wrong on its face. She says, no, he's not generally unavailable, but the archivist is more intimately involved with one of our big open government initiatives, so he's just a good person to talk to. So, you know, what struck me about that is the National Archives themselves, as we point out in the article, are delaying their release of things or changing what they're saying about things. And so it seems that we do want to go to, if we can't get to Obama, who I don't think is deeply involved, we want to get to Sunstein, right, who is shaping the policy.
Uh-huh.
Now, I think one of the reasons, Bert, that they don't want Sunstein to be visible, and I get into this, is the, as I say, his memo where he called for cognitive infiltration of groups that present alternative views on things like 9/11 and so forth. And on our site, you can actually watch this video where a young man confronts him at a talk. I guess Sunstein doesn't go out in public very much anymore. And he says to him, hey, what about this memo you wrote? And Sunstein just totally seems disingenuous. He claims, oh, I wrote a lot of things. I don't remember writing that. Well, of course he remembers writing that because it's all over the Internet, and it's the main reason he's under attack. But he actually, instead of saying, you know, look, I don't want to, you know, I don't really want to get into that, or I shouldn't have written that, or I'd like to explain, but it's not germane now, he just ducks the whole thing. And I think this is just the wrong personality to be in charge of open government.
And when we talk about personalities and Mr. Sunstein, more and more Americans are concerned, and I have to give credit where it's due, to the Occupy movement, about the relationship between big corporations, between Wall Street and the finance industry, and what's supposed to be a government of, by, and for the people. There's much more demand, I think, for openness and corporate accountability. And Russ Baker, you suggest that Sunstein has had a role in this area as well. I wonder if you could explain that.
Well, yeah, but in the wrong direction. Instead of corporate accountability, his office, even the title of the office, which is, you know, they throw open records together with regulatory reform. Now, that sounds fine because, of course, you would say, well, yeah, I mean, if the, you know, the regulatory apparatus is open up and provide documents, that is regulatory reform. But the term regulatory reform, like things like welfare reform and so on, turns out to mean something else entirely and something much more hard-edged. And what it really usually means is regulatory relief. It means lightening the burden on business. Now, look, you could argue that the burden on business is too heavy or it needs to be lightened in certain ways. I think that's certainly reasonable. But the fact of the matter is, when you put those two things together, what you have is a man whose job is, and we see this with Sunstein, where he actually is blocking things like food safety regulations on behalf of these giant food processing companies, but certainly not in the public interest. And he's doing that while he's you know, supposed to be, that office is supposed to be declassifying the Kennedy records. And so you say, you know, there really is a kind of a mixed and in some ways conflicting mission going on here. And I wish, again, that the media and public figures would talk about these kinds of things. These are the things that really do affect our daily lives. These are the kinds of things that are not covered. And one of my great frustrations and I would say continuing themes at our website, whowhatwhy.com, is about the distraction of the public with lots of things that they don't need to worry about, that don't matter, and filling up our bandwidth so that we don't have the time or the ability to focus on these somewhat more complex but ultimately much, much more urgent matters.
And, you know, there's something that was created, I believe in reaction to the Nixon administration, the Freedom of Information Act. And I went to the Freedom of Information Act website. It says President Obama and Attorney General Holder have directed agencies to apply a presumption of openness, in responding to Freedom of Information Act requests. Do you have any sense about this administration and the Freedom of Information Act?
Yeah, I want to give them a little bit of credit. There are definitely some advances in opening up government, and there are a few groups that are focused specifically on this. And from time to time, we hear their pleasure at, for example, what I understand is that the response time on Freedom of Information requests has been much faster. Daryl Issa, a very much a nemesis of the Obama administration, gave them an incredibly onerous demand for a huge number of records, which they complied with. So I do think there is some improvement in general. The problem that I'm focusing on with some specificity is the blockage at the higher levels of the stuff that somebody really doesn't want to come out. So yes, a general improvement, and I think this in a way is almost a kind of a metaphor for Obama himself, a general improvement across the board in a lot of areas, but ultimately the same policies continue. And I think we see this, let's say, with the treatment of Wall Street, the treatment of foreign policy and interventionism. Across the board, what we see is a tendency to, where possible, pay at least lip service, if not more, to the principles of freedom and democracy and, you know, doing the right thing and human values, but then being nipped in the bud by entrenched and often covert interests when it comes to the big picture.
Boy, that gets frustrating, doesn't it? I want to ask, just the last question is, maybe generations after me, after my generation, the boomers don't care as much, but my generation was deeply affected by that day in November 1963. Russ Baker, will we ever know the truth about the JFK assassination? For that matter, September 11th?
I wish I could answer that question. I can tell you that there are a pretty good number of dedicated people who are continuing to look into these things. To some extent, I am continuing to look into them. To some extent, Who, What, Why writes about these things. We just posted video of a credible eyewitness who witnessed a second shooter, she says, at the Ambassador Hotel when Robert F. Kennedy was killed.
Yes.
So I think that to some extent these things will come out. On the other hand, we are handicapped by the passage of time. The longer they're able to drag out the release of these documents, the more difficult it becomes. So there's no question the clock is ticking, and I think we all need to stand up and be heard and demand from our elected officials that they push the federal government to get those documents out while there is still time.
Boy, I sure hope so. And I hope we can get to that and push for it. And, hey, we'll see. Of course, I have no idea where Etch-a-Sketch Romney stands on these things, if he'd be any better.
I certainly doubt it.
I doubt it, too. The website is whowhatwhy.com, and it was an honor to have Russ Baker with us today, written for all kinds of publications, internationally renowned for getting to the truth. And I believe we deserve to hear the truth, and hopefully we can handle the truth that question was brought up in that movie so many years ago. Well, again, thank you very much for being with us. Russ Baker, the website is whowhatwhy.com. Thanks very much for being with us on the Burt Cohen Show, and hopefully there will be some truth-telling. Thanks very much.
Okay, you bet.